Ladies and gentlemen, and fellow golfers, for your entertainment.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa, brought to you by the Hagen Oaks Golf Super Shop, America's most awarded golf facility. Naturewood Home Furnishings, where it's all about choices and always about quality.
Sacktown Sports 1140 listeners, welcome to the Golf to Go Radio Hour right here. With Scott Marsh, I'm Frank LaRosa, and boy, have we got a good show for you tonight, huh, Scott?
We do. This is exciting. I mean, you can't get much better than the great Gary Gerald.
You know, G-Man and I have been friends for 50-plus years, having worked at the old KCRA radio years ago, and it's been fun watching his career soar, and certainly be even more fun to play some golf with him, as you and I have both had the opportunity to do. But what a week he has had, huh?
Just incredible. Just having called his 3,000th game with the Sacramento Kings, that is a milestone that is just almost unfathomable to think about and really put into context. And for him to do it as well as he has for 38 years and to still be absolutely on top of his game is remarkable.
It was really fun to watch the outpouring of support and love on social media, and the great story that Joe Davidson wrote in the B about the upcoming 3,000th call. Everybody to a person certainly displays an incredible amount of respect and admiration for G-Man.
He is universally liked. Gary's one of those guys, if you don't like him, you have a problem. It's not that Gary has a problem. And he loves the golf, too.
He does. He does enjoy it. You had a story about him you were going to tell me.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, of all the great things he does, and I know we'll get into just all the different sports that he's broadcasted to, I wish he could have done the Masters or golf sometime, because he has the ultimate smooth voice for the game. And I think he would have been a phenomenal golf broadcaster.
I think you're absolutely right. And smooth certainly does describe what a call from him is all about. You know, we've played some great golf courses over the years, and it doesn't matter, you know, what the level of the golf course is. He still approaches it with the same enthusiasm and excitement and smile and open hand of welcome to everybody he sees. So it's really fun to be a friend and to spend that time with him. Also on the show today, Mr. Garrett Johnston, and you know Garrett from a long time ago.
You do. Yeah, Garrett and I worked together back when he was in Sacramento, working at Access Cable, kind of going up the rounds, and he's a good friend of mine, and he loves the game of golf, and he's a really good golf reporter, and does a fabulous golf podcast.
You know, Garrett was the sort of typical let me learn all I can while he was here in Sacramento. And I remember him sitting down with me a number of times asking about being a member of the golf media, and how do you get involved, and how do you meet these people, and how do you do that, and picking my brain to the point that I thought, this guy's going to figure out what he wants to do, and he's going to go do it. And it's certainly been fun to watch his career and see how it's grown over the years.
No doubt. He's talked to all the greats in the game.
This is the Golf to Go Radio Hour. We're going to break away for a moment here and do a couple of messages and pay for the show. And then we'll be right back with the G-Man and how he got involved in the game and what he thought about his 3,000th call. Back with us in a moment.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sacktown Sports.
Welcome into another Golf to Go Radio Hour right here on Sacktown Sports 1140. Hi, I'm Frank LaRosa along with Scott Marsh. And Scott, what a special day we've got today. Mr. Gary Gerald, the G-Man, the 38-year voice of the Sacramento Kings, is with us. And Gary just celebrated his 3,000th call. That's pretty remarkable. Welcome, Gary. Thanks for being with us on the show.
Well, thank you guys. I appreciate that. It's been kind of a hectic last 24, 36 hours around here, but a lot of fun. I'm in Oklahoma City with the Kings while you guys are in Sacktown.
Yeah, but you're after some tornado warnings previous night, you're out there with a kind of 70-degree day today, so we're a little envious of you.
I wish I could be on the golf course with you guys today, because it's that, you know, low 70s and not a cloud to be seen anywhere.
Golf has been a lot of fun with you the past few years, and we're certainly going to talk about that. But let's not gloss over this this 3,000th game and 38 years too quickly. Everybody has been so quick to kind of congratulate you and let you know how much they love you and how much they appreciate you and how much, you know, even the ones that know you simply as the radio voice, consider you a friend and, someone that's really important in their lives. What was your emotion like before the game and what was it like after the game?
Well, there was a certain sense of anticipation because, yes, it is. It's a milestone, and there aren't very many folks over the years in the NBA who've had the privilege of calling as many as 3,000 games. So it's fairly select company, and I was, I've been very aware of that. And one of the ironies to me was the fact that initially, as the season began to unfold, the game that was going to be number 3,000 would have been the game that we played a couple of nights ago in LA against the Clippers that turned out to be one of the most historic NBA games of all time. The second highest scoring game ever. It went to double overtime. And from the opening tip, it was one of those games that just was full of so many storylines and so many great performances by various individuals. And it was as entertaining a game as maybe I've ever been involved in from a number of standpoints. So that turned out to be game number 2999 because I was ill a few weeks back for one game. I had lost my voice. And so basically he said, well, let's set one out here. And hopefully the voice comes back. It did. And then it turns out to be this past evening in Oklahoma City as number 3,000. So it was, both of them were significant in the sense that the Kings get the win. That's the most important thing from my standpoint. And while all of the drama of the double overtime victory against the Clippers probably had more impact, the 3,000th, I mean, it allowed me to kind of be more involved in the various activities and one thing or another. And so I have no quarrel with the way it played out. And I'm just blown away at the reaction and, you know, the generosity of the team and what they were able to do to make it such a memorable evening from my standpoint.
You know, Scott and I were certainly among those who made sure that we let the social media world know how much we appreciate you as well. But I have to say, I was listening to the 3,000th game as so many people were, but I again, I've known you for 50 plus years. We've been friends a long time, but I can't tell you how proud I was just at the way you called the game so well. And beginning of the third quarter, you just sort of eloquently turned to your folks beside and told them how much you appreciated their help as well. But throughout the game, your emotional level, the ups and downs, and it's just, it was, I guess the word is smooth, Gary. You're just so smooth and so professional. It was really fun to listen to the game.
No, thank you, Frank. I appreciate that. I obviously appreciate the friendship for such a long period of time. And we've had some good memories along the way. And Scott's been a part of it as we've in recent years. And he's, of course, been a longtime part of our broadcasts and the pregame shows and one thing or another. And it's been quite an adventure. And I'm the one that's lucky. I'm the one that's blessed to have the opportunity. And I try to always keep that, you know, in good perspective.
And that's what makes you so special and stand out is your humility. I know we've been around places where people will come up to you and, you know, you'll have a nice conversation with them. And as they walk away, you're just kind of very surprised that they found you out of the crowd. And that's what one of the reasons you're so engaging to people. You're the 38 year announcer just the voice, I guess, of the Sacramento Kings, but there's so much more to you. I mean, when you think about where your career started and all of the sports that you've covered, I mean, you certainly made a name for yourself in auto racing as well, but you know, to have been an NBC football broadcaster to have covered sumo wrestling in the Olympics. I mean, you've really done it all. And I guess one of the questions I would ask is, you know, if basketball hadn't come along and you only had to pick one sport, you know, what would it be?
Oh, my. That's tough, because I think every sport has a certain appeal and a certain lure. And I've been blessed to be involved in a lot of a variety. And, you know, I've not been involved in baseball other than on the fringe and a couple of one-off opportunities there. I've never been involved in soccer, never been involved in hockey, but most everything else along the way. And there are probably not a lot of people that can say, well, I was the host of the Jackie Stewart Celebrity Skeet Shoot in North Wales. It's you mentioned the sumo wrestling with the late Pat Morita. What an amazing experience. And you get immersed in these as you learn about the particular sport and try to be up to speed. But everything, you know, from the NFL and the NBA down through the line. And, you know, if it was cycling, which I was involved with quite a bit, a couple of world championships and the Olympics, water skiing. International events, one thing or another. It's just, you know, what an amazing opportunity to have a ride like that where you touch on so many different sports. And I don't know that there's a favorite, Frank. They all, as I say, have a certain appeal. And I certainly enjoyed the opportunity. I did about 50 NFL games in my career. And that was when I was working at NBC. And I only had a chance to work on the West Coast, I think, 3-4 times. Most of the time it was in the Midwest or on the East Coast. But there's a certain rhythm to football, as Scott well knows. He calls collegiate football that enables you to get your analyst in and out without the frenetic pace of basketball. They're vastly different in that respect. And there's a certain structure, I think, to football that I enjoyed. And I've had some remarkable experiences along that line. So that stands out, but they all stand out. And, you know, you mentioned the motorsports, the fact that I've been able to, you know, call events basically around the world. Went to Australia 8, 9, 10 times to cover Indy cars there on the streets of the Gold Coast, and, you know, to go to Rio de Janeiro and do road racing there, many European countries, Mexico City, just on and on. So I'm really fortunate.
We're talking about the G-Man, Gary Gerald, 38-year voice of the Sacramento Kings. Scott, I have to say, I was really touched by the Facebook message that you posted about Gary's upcoming 3,000th call before the game, and just how you spoke about your relationship with him as well.
Well, yeah, for me, it's so personal. I mean, Gary didn't know me, but I certainly knew him a long time before I met him, because when, you know, the Kings came to Sacramento, I was just a kid, and I was so excited to have the team here. And, you know, again, most of the games weren't on TV. So, you know, when I was, you know, evenings, I would be glued to the radio just listening to the first Kings games. And it was just so exciting. Gary was so awesome. And everybody knows how awesome he is, because he was the same then as he is now. And that's part of what makes him so great. But it's like just glued to closing of games and last second shots and everything else. And I thought, this guy has the coolest job in the world. Like, if I could somehow get this job, this would be the greatest thing ever. So fast forwarding, when I got a chance to start working on some Kings broadcasts and, you know, was able to sit next to Gary and do some games, that was truly a professional dream come true. I sincerely mean that. And so, you know, Gary, I just couldn't be more thrilled for you and happy for you. And of course, it's because of who you are that everybody's so excited for you, because you're just such a wonderful human being on top of being such a great broadcaster.
Oh, now I'm blushing and I'm embarrassed. Thank you. Oh, thank you very much. It's interesting to me to think back, because you mentioned, you know, in your youth,
Yeah.
Listening to radio, and people don't understand in this current day where every game is televised, that wasn't the case not that long ago. Yeah. And a lot of people, your only choice from broadcast was to listen to radio and to get the call there. And so it's nice to be able to go back and look upon that and say, yeah, maybe you had an influence, and some young aspiring broadcasters wanted to say, man, that would be a great life or a great job or whatever. That comes with old age, I guess.
Sure. The Arco Thunder, I'll never forget it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It's so much fun. Go ahead, Gary. I'm sorry.
We owe a debt of gratitude to Greg Luckenbill and to also Dutch Van Dusen, who just passed away within the last week. And bringing the Kings from Kansas City to Sacramento, building that arena. And, you know, it's no secret that building was built on the cheap. And the plywood wooden floors just provided some of the character. And that's where the Arco Thunder came from. And it was, you know, fans would stomp their feet and the place would literally vibrate. I mean, with the energy of the crowd. And it was pretty doggone cool all the way around.
Yeah, it's been a special ride. There's no doubt about it. And I was just going to say, you know, in baseball, if you get 3,000 hits, you're an automatic for the Hall of Fame. Well, you were already an automatic before your 3,000th game. But, you know, it's the gold standard, no doubt.
No, you're kind. Thank you.
We're talking with Gary Gerald here on the Golf to Go Radio Hour. And the Golf to Go Radio Hour is a golf show. And we've all spent some time on the golf course. And we're going to get to that in a minute. But you know, Scott's comment about listening to you as a kid, you're hearing a lot of that lately, but I guess what I would say is you've certainly become a mentor to so many. But I'm wondering, what's the best piece of advice you got along the way, and who are the mentors that you'll remember?
Well, there were people in my teenage years when the local radio station in my home in Midland, Michigan was my second home. And I went there virtually every night of every week, and just hung out. And a couple of the people that were DJs there, disc jockeys, people in this day and age, you don't have disc jockeys. I mean, everything's automated, and it's very rare when people actually play music and talk about it, one thing or another. They were kind to me, and they brought me along, and they had a lot of influence. As far as advice, I don't know if there was anything in particular that I remember from the early days of broadcasting and trying to develop a broadcast identity. But one of the things you quickly learn is, and I think it's really important for people to know, and it doesn't apply just to broadcasting. It applies to anything you're involved in. Don't be afraid to fail. We learn from failure, and we learn how to, you know, to be better the next time. And everybody along the way is going to stumble at some point, and you have failures. That's just part of the process. And I think that's probably stuck in my head as much as anything over the years.
You know, as children, we learn how to walk by falling and getting up. And we forget that as we get older, that, you know, that's how that lesson stuck in our heads. And the notion of failing and being embarrassed about something that you did, that makes you so much sharper and better as you move along, because as you come to a point like that, you remember that and find a more interesting way to get around that.
Well, and you think about it in terms of playing golf, and you think about how strong mentally you have to be if your livelihood depends on every swing you take and the performance that you have. And you have to develop, obviously, the ability, if you have a bad shot or a bad performance, you've got to find a way to put that aside and be focused on the task at hand, the next swing, the next adventure. Now, I'm nowhere near, as you guys know, anywhere near anything in terms of, you know, being successful in that sense. But I have so much respect for the people who make their living, men and women, playing the game of golf. It is such a challenge. But then if you're going to be successful in any sports venture, it's all the same, because you have to give your very best every time you have the opportunity. And, you know, we go back to basketball, and I hear on a nightly basis the coaching staff, Mike Brown, the head coach of the Kings, done such a marvelous job in not only revitalizing the organization, but defining roles, demanding accountability, not afraid to call his players out publicly. And they talk about the ability to find consistency in your performance, to get as close to 48 minutes a night of your best as you can. And we know that that's over an 82-game regular season. It's impossible to do that, but that's what you aspire to do every time you go on the floor for basketball. Well, I'm sure that you talk to any, and Frank, you've talked to the greatest names in the world of golf over the years, and I'm sure they're all united in telling you that, you know, the work ethic, you have to have the discipline, you have to have the mental fortitude to be able to go out there and work on every facet of the game so that you continually get better.
Getting better is what we're all striving for every day. We're, you know, this is going so well. We haven't really gotten into the golf conversation. So let's take a break and come back in just a couple of minutes and talk about Gary Gerald on the golf course.
No
this
boy.
Is the Golf to Go Radio Hour.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sactown Sports.
Welcome back into the Golf to Go Radio Hour right here on Sactown Sports 1140. Scott Marsh along with Frank LaRosa and Gary Gerald, the G-Man, is with us. G-Man, we were talking about golf, and you and I over the past few years have been able to play a lot of golf at a lot of great places, and Scott Marsh has been along for the ride on some of those as well. Tell me, when was the first time you put a golf club in your hands, and what was that feeling like?
I remember very, very young. My father, when I was 5 years old, he had cancer, and for 7 years he had to fight cancer. And on the rare opportunities that his health was good enough, every summer we would go back to his and my mom's hometown in Pennsylvania. And my dad would play golf with one of his brothers, and they would let me tag along. And that was the first time that I got a chance to really, you know, experience what it was like to swing a golf club and hit a ball, and they'd let me hit it off the tee maybe once or twice out of 18 holes on this 9-hole course where you repeated the 9. But at any rate, that was the first time. And there was some fascination. There was something that just registered and said, you know, this is pretty cool. And then fast forward, after my father passed away when I was 12, probably the greatest Christmas gift that I ever received. My mother, bless her heart, didn't have the financial resources, but she found a way to get me a starter set of golf clubs. And I had some Wilson staff golf clubs, I believe they were, and it was just the basics. It was a 3, 5, 7, 9 iron, a putter, and 2 woods. And from that point on, I was really hooked, and I couldn't wait for the winter weather around Christmas to go away and get a chance to get on a golf course in Michigan.
Did you have any formal lessons, or did you kind of learn the game on your own?
No, I've never had formal lessons, and it's been, you know, a soul thing. I do remember Sports Illustrated had a terrific series way, way back in my youth featuring Ben Hogan, and it was kind of a instruction guide, you know, to the grip and to the swing and one thing and another, and I kind of devoured that. And that's what I think was the closest to any real formal training that I had. But then it was just solely me trying to adapt to it and trying to find a comfort zone and trying to, you know, get a little better than just hacking it around, which I still do very well. Hacking around.
Well, you know, I've talked to so many people about the game over the years, and you kind of breaks down into a couple of camps. You know, there's the folks that are grinding all the time, you know, wanting to get better. They'll shoot 65 and lose sleep that they didn't shoot 63 that day. and then there's the kind of the bigger crowd is You know, this is weekend recreation. This is fun. This is relationships. This is being with my friends. This is spending some time, having some laughs. And oh, the game is such a great way to be able to do it, because basically, I suppose, in a four-hour round of golf, there isn't a whole lot of golf. I mean, when you consider the time you're actually hitting balls, you know, it's more about walking and talking and enjoying each other's company. Scott, I know you've had, you know, the opportunity to play with Gary and I over the years. And what stands out to you about playing golf with the G-Man?
Well, a couple of things. One, he's a great player out of the bunker. So I want to know his secret for success out of the bunker, because Gary, you are a very good short game player, particularly out of the sand.
I have a lot of confidence for whatever reason, hitting out of the sand. Now, I wish that I was smart enough and good enough to avoid being in the sand, but I'm not. So I get plenty of practice at that. But I do have, and I think confidence is a big part of it. And Frank, you touched on it, and this is something that, you know, I don't know if it's a product of old age or what, but to me, yes, golf is supposed to be fun. Why make it hard on yourself by beating yourself up mentally if you don't perform well? And you know, you guys know, I'm out there to just enjoy your company and to have a good time. I have no second thoughts whatsoever of moving a ball away from a tree root or a tree trunk. I have no second thoughts about playing the shorter tees on some golf courses, playing a combination that doesn't make it so long, because there's a friend of mine by the name of La Rosa, and I've heard him say constantly, golf is supposed to be fun. And I absolutely subscribe to that 100%. And so I want to have fun. And if, you know, if you're a purist and you say, oh no, you got to play it the way it lies, one thing, everybody has their own way that they approach the game. Well, I'm not afraid. I move the ball. I, you know, get it teed up where I can hit it off something. I don't want to hit it off of a hard pan or out of the mud or, you know, in the rough, put it up where it's fluffy or one thing or another. That's just the way I approach the game. So when I have a good round of golf, you probably say, okay, now technically, if we played by the book, you know, by the PGA standards, I probably have to add 5, 6, 7 strokes to my score. I don't know. But again, have fun. Enjoy it.
No doubt about that. Now, I'm worried about after you put on the defensive player of the game chain, are you going to have any neck or back issues for the 23 golf season? How heavy was that chain?
It's heavy. I don't know the full story of how that came about. Jordy Fernandez, who's the associate head coach with Mike Brown, I'm told is the one who was really responsible and came up with the idea. And for those who aren't familiar, when the Kings win a game, in the locker room immediately after the game, the coaches huddle and they make a decision on who had the most impact defensively. And they have this beautifully made chain that's full of glitz and glamour and a medallion with a Kings logo. And they have a fog machine and purple lights that they flash on and off, and one thing or another when they make the presentation to whomever. And so it's the real deal. I mean, it's, you talk about serious bling, it's serious bling. It is heavy, but hopefully it will not impact my spine, my shoulders, yes, or anything else. So when we get home in a couple of days, hopefully we'll get on the golf course.
That is good to hear, and we're looking forward to it. I'm curious, over your years in terms of playing golf with some of the Kings players, who might have been some of the better players. For example, I got to play at a Kings tournament with Greg Ostertag, and he absolutely blew me away. He is virtually a scratch golfer who was just incredible from tee to green. I suggested you should be playing in the celebrity tournament up in Tahoe. He said he tried to. He could have qualified, but he wasn't, quote, a big enough celebrity in their mind. And so they never offered him an invitation. But I'm just curious for you, in terms of your experiences playing with the players over the years, if you've had a chance to do that very much.
Well, let me think about that for just a half a second. I never got to play with John Barry, but John Barry was an avid golfer and a very good golfer. I played with his dad a couple of different times in my younger days. The casinos used to have tournaments in Reno and Tahoe. And Rick Barry was a great name, and they loved having him come there because of his high profile. And I just remember the first time I played with Rick Barry, we were playing a par four in Reno, and he drove the green.
Wow.
And it was 380 yards or something like that, drove the green. And my jaw dropped to my waist. I mean, it was just like, are you kidding me? And then, of course, you know, you try not to be intimidated after that. But he was spectacular. Bobby Jackson's a really good golfer. Yes. Doug Christie is a really good golfer. Yes. Now, because of their basketball responsibility as coaches, they don't get a chance to play in the off season. But when they get their game tuned up, they're good. Yeah. They're really good. And I also had, I'm trying to think about, now his name escapes me. I just had a chance to play with him at the Gold Rush Classic, John Jacobs tournament, Frank, at Rancho Murrieta in a practice round last year. From Indiana, former King.
Oh, yes.
Oh, man.
Yes.
See, here's the hard part about getting old. I can picture him talking. He coaches a basketball team at one of the HBCU universities on the East in the Carolinas, and I cannot think of his name right now. That's embarrassing. But he's a really good golfer. Whoever he is,
he was a good golfer and a really nice guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it'll come to us. We'll come back with that in the break. what's your maybe memory's not the right question for you right now, but what would be your best memory on a golf course?
Couple of things come to mind. As a teenager, I had an uncle who headed up the accounting department at a state mental institution that had a 9-hole golf course. And when I would visit my uncle, he would go to work and he'd let me go out and play on this 9-hole course. And it was a beautiful course, Ypsilanti, Michigan. And as a teenager one time, I hit a drive that was into the fairway, adjacent fairway. So I hit my 3-wood as my second shot, had no idea, hit it blind, never saw it, but it went in the hole for an eagle. And there was some of the patients who, you know, they did allow to be out on the grounds. And there was this young man who was literally jumping up and down with pure joy. It went in, it went in, it went in. And I didn't get to see it, but I'll never forget that particular moment. There was a time at Del Paso when I had back-to-back tap-in birdies. That's never happened in my life.
All right.
Holes. That was a good one. And then, of course, I remember playing one time at Pebble Beach, and I had a birdie on, was it number 7, the famed par 3 there in the ocean. And the climate was pretty good that day, and I happened to hit one within 4 or 5 feet and was able to make the putt. So those are some of the ones that immediately come to mind.
You know, you are known for your prep work for your Kings games, but you've carried that over into your golf career as well, as you pretty much document the games or the rounds that you're able to play, and you know, especially during COVID and what was going on there, you had a couple of good years. You played a lot of golf there.
Well, thanks to the folks at El Mesero and, you know, having an honorary membership there, that really has escalated the opportunity to play a lot of golf. And because in the last, 6-7 years, I pulled the plug on the motorsports that had me on the road literally every weekend from early spring to late fall and wrapped around the basketball season. There weren't that many chances to play golf. And, you know, I was lucky if I played 2 or 3 times a year. Well, now in the last couple of years, I've been able to play somewhere in the vicinity of 75 to 80 rounds a year, which is a lot for me. And it's funny how the more you play, the better you get. But then your expectations get higher, and, you know, you can never meet your expectations. And you try your darndest to do that. But yeah, it's been great to be able to have the opportunity to play more. And I hope that, knock on whatever here, that I continue to be blessed with good health so that I can get out there and enjoy the game.
Gary, you've had a fascinating life, and all the people you've met, and I've just reveled in some of the stories that you've told of folks you've met along the way, from Julius Erving in basketball to people in racing, Paul Newman, and so on and so forth. And I don't know if any of them are golfers, but the kind of the question that pops through my head is if you had to pick a fantasy foursome. Well, you do have to, because I'm asking you the question. who would be in your fantasy foursome?
That's hard. That's really, really hard. And by the way, Bonzi Wells was the name that I couldn't come up
with. That's the guy.
Yeah, Bonzi. Okay. Bonzi. All right.
He hits the golf ball. He hits it
yes.
well. Yep. Okay, fantasy
he foursome. He was a lot of fun.
Probably La Rosa, Marsh, Jason Rahn. I've always been a huge David Letterman fan. I don't know if he ever has had a golf club in his hand or not, but I would find it fascinating to be on a golf course with David Letterman. He would certainly be one that I would enjoy. I don't know. I'm hard pressed to come up with others to fill out a foursome. That sounds extremely stupid, but I guess I fall into that category.
I don't find that answer confusing at all. Again, it goes back to who you are. I don't think it matters whether they're one of the most famous athletes that ever was, or whether it's your next door neighbor. You are Gary Gerald, the G-man to everybody, and that's why you are universally loved and respected, and that's why Sacramento and Northern California went so nuts over this 3,000th game. I mean, it gives all of us an opportunity not only to be fans, but to let you know how much we respect you and love you and appreciate all you've done. So your answer doesn't surprise me at all.
Well, thank you, Frank. I as I've said before, I'm the lucky one. It's really amazing that I still have the opportunity. It's amazing to me that at my age, I have the opportunity to do what I do. I still have a passion for doing it, and I hope that I'll be able to continue to do it for some time to come. And hopefully we'll get a chance to, play some more rounds of golf here, there, everywhere, and we'll have fun. By golly, we will have fun.
We will have fun on the course, and hopefully there's one day, I'm knocking myself too, that there's going to be an NBA championship call from the G-Man with the Sacramento Kings.
Wouldn't that be something?
That would be something.
That would be cause for pure celebration, yes, right there.
Would. Yes, it
and
would.
And speaking of golf, Scott, you're complimenting me on my short game of one thing or another.
Yep. If
you and I could combine, I could transfer some of my game to you, and then you transfer to me your amazing ability to crush the ball off the tee, we might have a good thing going.
Can I recruit you for an alternate shot tournament sometime?
Yeah.
All right. Done. That's done.
Gary Gerald, the G-Man, along with Frank LaRosa and Scott Marsh on the Golf to Go Radio Hour. Gary, this has been a treat. I appreciate your time. You were in a hotel in Oklahoma City, and tomorrow you have another call with the Kings. Thanks so much for taking time out of your prep to be with us, and we both look forward to teeing it up with you soon.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank Golf you. To Go Radio Hour continues right after this.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sactown Sports.
Golf to Go Radio Hour continuing right here on Sactown Sports 1140, welcoming in Garrett Johnston. Garrett is a golf journalist who lived in Sacramento many, many years ago, and he and I would sit around and talk about golf and a lot of what-ifs, and a lot of Garrett's what-ifs have come true living now in the D.C. area. And Garrett, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. Great to be back with you guys.
It's nice to talk to you. It's nice to catch up with people that have moved on to other areas of the country. Tell us, let's catch us up on what Garrett Johnston is doing right now.
Yeah. So lucky to be, I'm married. I live in Washington, D.C. I'm doing a lot of behind the scenes camera work for the Scott Van Pelt Show here at ESPN in D.C. and also NBC News. And I do my best to cover golf, because that's my biggest passion. And I probably get to about 8 to 10 golf events a year. I was lucky to go to the British Open at St. Andrews last year. And Bay Hill will be there for one day this week. So it's just a blast. And you know what? You always told me this, Frank, years ago. You said golf is about friends. And to me, the extension of that in covering tour golf is it's about relationships, right? And it's so important to keep building those relationships. And that's what I'm going to work on this week at Bay Hill.
Yeah, you know, to be able to have a relationship with a tour player and to have him or her remember you from the last time you interviewed them and it be a positive experience certainly makes that second shot and third shot much easier, huh? So this week, this weekend is the Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill Club in Orlando, and I know over the years you've talked to some of the greats of golf, including Rory and John Rahm, and I don't know if you ever had a chance to talk with Arnold, but you've talked to some of the tour players about their experiences with Arnold and Bay Hill and the Invitational in particular. Tell us a little bit about that, Garrett.
Yeah, so I was fortunate to do a report for PGA Tour Live last year that I basically pitched to PGA Tour Live, said, hey, in between golf shots, if you guys are so hyper-focused on a marquee group with Rory, why don't I give you a little behind-the-scenes scoop on what Rory's relationship is with Arnold Palmer and a little history there and what it means for him to play with Arnold Palmer. So what's funny is I went up to Rory on Tuesday of the Arnold Palmer event last year, and I said, Rory, I'm doing a report for you for PGA Tour Live. Instead of looking like a bumbling idiot and guessing what you've been up to, I'd love to chat with you when you have time. And he said, you know what? Why don't you walk two holes with me during my pro-am on Wednesday? And I said, wow, a superstar in his sport, number one player in the world, is like, yeah, I'll give you 20 minutes. Let's just walk and talk. So that's what I did. And basically what I gleaned from Rory, specifically his relationship with Arnold Palmer, was that he was invited by Mr. Palmer to play in 2015 for the first time, and he could see it in Arnold's eyes, just what it meant to the king to play in his tournament, to have Rory, the big name, in his event. And they had dinner that first year in 2015, and there was just a really strong bond that was built. And he said he hasn't missed a year since, and it's just a special thing for somebody like Rory. And you can just hear it in his voice too, like it meant a lot to him, and that's why he keeps playing in this event, obviously, to kind of honor Arnold Palmer. What's funny is also last year I talked to John Rahm, as you mentioned. I said, you know, John, I know you're not an American, but what is it like being a part of this event? I know Mr. Palmer maybe wasn't what Seve was to you. And he's like, well, no, but to have a chance to add this to my legacy, I'm all about legacy and how I'm going to be remembered, but to be able to put Arnold Palmer's title as part of my career would be a huge win for me. So you know, some of these guys, it really does matter to them, kind of looking ahead, you know, for their career. So,
again, back to relationships and friends, and that's what the game is all about. Arnold Palmer meant so much to so many, you know, unless you had a chance to be with him and watch him respond to the crowd and watch him respond to the players and just watch him be Arnold Palmer, which in and of itself had to be, you know, a little overwhelming to him sometimes, you know, to wake up and remember, hey, I'm Arnold Palmer. You know, this is going to be an Arnold Palmer kind of day. I mean, he was a remarkable human being.
Yes, but also at the same time, very relatable. I remember 2016, my very first Arnold Palmer Invitational was his last one. It would end up being his last one, but he was watching with bated breath, watching his grandson, Sam Saunders, in that final Friday group. And like, literally, like he was like a fan, like this, it was funny seeing him react to every shot. And Peter Jacobson got off the broadcast that day, and he ended up walking and riding in the cart with Arnold. Literally Arnold would drive his cart around tee boxes, around the greens, because he owned it. It's his place. It's Bay Hill. So that's just how it was.
You know, Peter Jacobson, as you mentioned, I think that he more than anyone has sort of taken on the mantle of you know, what Arnold Palmer started. He says that watching him relate to people and watching him be Arnold Palmer made him realize how important it was for the players to relate to the crowd, for the players to relate to the fans, for the players to be human with the fans, and she's certainly done a remarkable job in taking up that banner.
He has, and another guy, Adam Scott, actually told me this last year at Bay Hill. He said that as a 21-year-old sponsors exemption first timer, Arnold Palmer let him play in his tournament, and he had never met Arnold Palmer. He's this kid from Australia, and here he was on the first hole at Bay Hill, and he sees Arnold's behind the green in his cart. He's like, "Oh man!" And he's obviously talking himself up, like, "How am I going to work up the courage to meet Mr. Palmer?" And before he can get out with his trembling hand and meet Mr. Palmer, Arnold grabs his hand and says, "Hey, I'm Arnold. Adam, I'm so happy that you're here." Like, he made the moment about Adam Scott, which is phenomenal. If you think about it, if you're in Adam Scott's shoes. So a really cool thing, like you said, about the relationships, and just what he's trying to go going forward as well.
Scott, it's kind of fun having known Garrett here in Sacramento and to hear his stories of walking with the game's greats, huh?
Yeah, well, Garrett and I go back to our Access Sacramento TV days and working on high school football and baseball productions. So, Garrett, you've come a long way, that's for sure. You talk about Arnold Palmer. I'm curious, are we going to see you at Augusta again in April?
You know what? I would love to go, and it's always, like, obviously my favorite event to cover. I think I've been to 10 of them, which is amazing. You can't ever take that for granted. But you know what? I've got three kids now, and it's not in the cards for this year. So life changes, and I'm a blessed guy, and it's just not going to happen for the Masters this year, though.
Well, we will miss you there, but I know you've got a lot of things you're working on there. One thing I have to throw out, Frank, Garrett does such a great podcast, Beyond the Clubhouse, which has such great guests. Tony Finau was featured recently. Of course, Garrett, you're good friends with Jim Nantz. You've had him on several times on this podcast. And for any golf fan, they definitely would love to check this out. It's Beyond the Clubhouse with Garrett Johnson.
Doing a remarkable job. Garrett, we appreciate you spending a little bit of time with us, and we wish you continued success with not only with your golf game, but raising three children, because that may be tougher as well.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Scott. Frank, great to talk to you guys.
Golf to Go Radio Hour wraps up another week. Here we go, Scott. Now we're looking for next week's guests, we hope, we set a pretty high bar today with G-Man and Garrett. So Golf to Go Radio are back next week. Play the game. Have some fun. Keep it the fairway. Keep smiling. Bye-bye.